Okay, my name is, my name is John Sherrill, and it's the 18th of March, 1998, and I'll be interviewing Dr. Avery Willis. It was conducted at the International Mission Board in Richmond, Virginia, where Dr. Willis is the Vice President for Overseas Strategy. Is that correct?
Senior Vice President of Overseas Operations.
Okay. And the tape number will be 3.18.98-AW. Well, as we start today, Dr. Willis, I will just ask you a brief question. The reason I say brief is because there's so much to your life, but we want to know a little bit about you. So could you please summarize your background, your sense of call to missions, some major influences on your life theologically, vocationally, and finally your involvement with the International Mission Board?
All right, that would be a big order to do that briefly. I was raised in the home of a pastor, an evangelist, and came to know Christ when I was 6 years old. And the very next day after I knew Christ, I began to share that with everybody around. And back when I was still a young kid, I would get on the back fence and preach, and I had one sermon. The text was John 3:16, and the sermon was Christ for the whole wide world. Which leads me to say that anybody who knows John 3:16 and loves the Lord knows what it's all about. It's Christ for the whole wide world. So from the very beginning, I've had a concern and interest for the whole world. Another influence early on there, where you had a missionary friend who went to China. It was during World War II. She was interned, and we did not hear from her for 3 years. But every night I prayed for her that she would come to, excuse me, we got an interruption here.
I'm sorry.
You want to start over, or you want to do it that way?
We can keep on going where we're at.
Okay. The missionary was Cleo Morrison, who went to China, and as I said, was in the Japanese camps during the war, and I continued to pray that God would deliver her. And I'm sure that caused my interest to be in the Orient at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I received a real missions call when I was about 16 in a youth rally, and made the decision, but they were nobody counseled me well, and so I was trying to back out of that and want to go with that at the same time. And it was about 3 years before I was able to come to that commitment the first year in college, where I really said, Lord, I'll go anywhere you want me to go, do anything you want me to do, and committed my life to be a missionary at that time. And there are other accounts of this a lot more extensive than that, so we'll just leave it that way.
Okay.
I pastored for 10 years in the States, 2 years while in college, and then 4 years in Fort Worth while going to seminary, and then 4 years in Grand Prairie while finishing up my degree and beginning the doctoral program there. And we went to Indonesia when we were 30, and as missionaries.
That's how old I am now.
And we served there 14 years. The first term was in Bogor in West Java. The second term, we began in Jember, East Java. But in that term, moved to the seminary, where later I became president of the seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were there 14 years. During that time, because of the great revival that came when there, at that time when about 2 million people were baptized in about 5 years, five or six
wow.
years. I realized we had to do discipling faster than I could do it.
Right.
I had not been willing to write that down up to that time, because I believe discipleship is a life relationship, and it's a life transfer more than it is a book or a course.
Mm-hmm.
But recognized we had to do something fast because we were doubling, and in fact, Baptist churches quadrupled during that time, and so we were trying to train the leaders. And so we began to write down what has come to know as be known as Master Life.
Right.
At that time. And again, it's a long story, but basically God said on that next furlough that I really needed to make that available to the States and to the rest of the world. And so after a long struggle, accepted that as His will, and went to the Baptist Sunday School Board where we adapted it for America and then for more than 50 other languages around the world. So I was at the Sunday School Board 15 years as the department director for discipleship and family concerns.
I've known quite a few people who have used Master Life. There in Kenya, there were quite a few missionaries that were using it there in Kenya.
Yeah. And then I came to the board in 1993, right after Jerry Rankin was elected as president.
Right.
And I've been here a little over 4 years now.
Okay. We're going to go on to another question now, but if any time you see, if you want to bring any of that into it, please do. But could you briefly define the restructuring of the International Mission Board?
Basically, we came to the conclusion that the International Mission Board had grown in increments, and by reorganizing and just shifting things around, we began to ask the question, what is God all about today and what is God doing? We came convinced the fact that God is moving much faster than we're able to move.
Right.
And so we said, what would it look like if the Lord took the International Mission Board and redid it like he wanted to do it today? So in a sense, we said, we've got a blank slate. We're willing to do whatever you want to do, Lord. And so with that, we began to reconfigure the regions and ended up finally having 14 regions with different affinity groups, so that they have about 300 to 350 missionaries in each region.
Mm-hmm.
And then we needed new regional leaders, and we were especially looking to get leaders, people who were not just administrators or managers, but people who were respected by their peers and who were leaders. And so then that slate of leaders was elected, 14 regional leaders, with 10 of those were new.
Right.
And then they have associates. One of them is an administrative associate that takes a lot of the burden of the administration, and then one or more strategy associates who help to work with the missionaries as they develop the strategies for their people groups and teams.
On April 9th, 1997, in his report to the board, Dr. Rankin uses the phrase "beginning of a new paradigm" to describe the board's restructuring. Would you agree with this statement? If so, why? And if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, a paradigm is another way of looking at things in which you see it in a totally different perspective. I really think the perspective came from the same concepts that are in Experiencing God materials, that we began to try to say, what is God doing, that we're on mission with him. It came out of a vision that we spelled out over about a 14-month period to say that we will lead Southern Baptists to be on mission with God,
mm-hmm.
to bring all the people to the world to save in faith in Jesus Christ. So being on mission with God was the thing that affected all that we were trying to do in missions work. So by taking a different look at it, it meant basically a total change in the way we looked at things and the way we did things.
Right.
So, as I said, already talking about the change in structure overseas, but it's a lot more than a change in structure. It's a change to say we're driven by a vision more than just by a burden, that we're moving forward into the 21st century, trying to be open and receptive to God and to recognize the fact that we still got 2,000 people groups plus without access to the gospel, and that we cannot just sit idly by when that's true, as well as a whole world of lost people that we must address.
Right. In the same address, he says, the present structure will not keep us on the cutting edge of the future. The first question I would like to ask that has to do with that is, what is this cutting edge he is speaking of?
Cutting edge is on the edge of lostness. It's very easy for us to get involved with what we're doing in any Christian endeavor. You just watch people get satisfied being in the Christian environment. And so to get on the edge means you're always moving out into the midst of lost people.
Right.
And bringing them to Christ. And so we're saying we need to look beyond where we have gone to see where we haven't gone. We need to move out there to the edge of lostness, as well as being open, receptive to any way that God would lead us today, not being locked into old traditions or paradigms.
Okay. The next question, was there a problem with the old structure?
Well, yes. I think there were two things that were basically hindering us in this process. One was our structure, that is, our administrative structure. We had 10 areas overseas.
Right.
We had loaded down those area directors with so much administrative work, it was very difficult for them to be creative. One, the number of missionaries, up to 600 in some cases, that they were dealing with. Secondly, because of just the bureaucracy of the institution's 152 years old and has grown to do certain things in certain ways. And so we said we've got to be open to brand new ways and not be held to policies of the past, and be ready to be moving right on out with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I saw some of that. I know when we were in Kenya, even though we were just regular ISC / MD of church planning students there and workers alongside with that mission, I know there was a lot that the missionaries there were thinking about and wondering what was going to happen. And as we go into the future, it'll just tell the tale of what this restructuring.
Well, the second factor was right there, John, in relating to the mission,
right,
which is the organization of missionaries in a country. And our whole mission structure was so developed so that you almost had to get everybody's approval to move ahead in something. And it really was not fashioned so that it could move quickly and focus on people groups. And so basically, we're in the process still, and will be for some time, of the missions redefining their culture and how we do the work on the field.
Okay, I think you've answered, let me ask the question anyway. What ways do you think the old structure hindered Southern Baptists from fulfilling the Great Commission of reaching all peoples with the gospel of Christ?
Well, one thing was that we still held to the idea that if we go out as missionaries and do the work, you back home hold the ropes.
Right.
And we won't think much about that. We're just going to think about where we are. And this day and age, that's really not the same situation it was when William Carey went out. People today can travel. They can be involved directly in missions. They want to be involved in prayer, in going, in being a part of what's going on. And so we need to be more active and proactive in getting them involved in missions. You take, we as Southern Baptists, if we had 0.1% of Southern Baptists were missionaries, they'd have 15,000. And we've only got 4,300.
4,300.
Yeah. And we would have, if 0.1%, if just went, you know, we would have 15,000. So you can see we're not anywhere near mobilized as a denomination. And what we're hoping this will do is unleash our missionaries as well as the churches to get more directly involved.
Okay. Could you explain the difference between harvest field and unreached?
Well, usually we've talked about that in terms of the harvest field and the last frontier or World A or the
right.
Time 40 window. By and large, we meant there are places that are very responsive to the gospel. Churches can be easily started. Missionaries are usually allowed to go there. However, in World A, which has been thought of as being unresponsive, we have found has not always been that way. Once we got past the gatekeepers, we found some very responsive peoples. So the harvest can be in what was traditionally a responsive people, or it can be in one who just never did get the gospel, or that the times have changed so that there is an immediate response to that.
Does this correlate any at all with changing over from just countries to people groups?
Well, yeah, it does, because when you begin to look at the world, God doesn't look at it like a globe with all the states and all the countries on it. he really looks at peoples, and that's the whole biblical emphasis, the tie ethne, the peoples.
All the peoples.
And so we're saying we are divided in 14 geographical regions, but all the regions are targeting peoples in those regions. And when they flow between a region, we just say, go ahead and go. You don't, you're not held back because of a regional line.
Okay. What is the board's position on going to the harvest fields as well as the unreached? And is there a scriptural mandate to do both? You can answer that one after the first.
Yeah, we think there is. Both of these are mandates. First of all, you got the Great Commission.
Right.
Which says make disciples of all nations. Preach the gospel to every person, every creature. So for those who've never heard, how can they hear without a preacher? How can they preach that they'd be sent? And you know the rest of the story. So yes, there is a command that we take the gospel to everybody. So that would cover world A. There are also scriptures where Jesus says in John the 4th chapter, look on the fields, they're white unto harvest, and enter into the harvest, reap the harvest. So both of those are true.
Okay.
And both of them are scriptural mandates.
Okay. And the next question. To your knowledge, how is the board using its resources to probe for those who are unreached?
Well, we have made a decided effort to try to evaluate who all these peoples are in the world, what level of evangelization there is, how many other groups are working with them, how much they've heard the gospel. And our research center is a part of a consortium that basically we lead and keep a lot of the materials here, which evaluates continually every people group to see where we're going on that. So that's it's a major effort every year also to get input again from all of our people and all the conventions and unions with whom we work.
Right. Are you aware of a little more specifically how finances are going at all towards, say, World A or towards the harvest fields?
Well, yes. In 1985 or 6, when we first began to look at World A, the International Mission Board was like everybody else. We had about 1% of our people and funds going to World A. Now we have 13%. But we still don't feel like that's enough. If 30% of the population is still in World A, 13% of resources and people are not adequate to meet that. So we obviously think we need to have more people going to World A to try to balance that better.
Okay, it'll be interesting to see how that pans out in the next few years. It's exciting to see what is happening with the International Mission Board and going to the unreached. This question is sort of related to that, but in the restructuring and the dissolvement of CSI, how does that fit into all of the restructuring in the sense of going to the unreached?
Well, as I mentioned, when the International Mission Board, then the Foreign Mission Board, decided to go for people groups, they developed a special cadre or group of people to try to focus on that.
Right.
It eventually came to be called Cooperative Services International, and eventually became a administrative unit, an area, it was one of 10. It had about a tenth of the missionaries in it eventually, and their focus was totally on people groups.
Right.
So once we committed to say, if we're going to people groups, why aren't all the regions focusing on people groups? Why should you only have one-tenth of your organization trying to focus on 30% of the world's lost people? So what we said we need to do is we need to take things that have been learned through the Cooperative Service International approaches, both by trial and error, good and bad. We learned a lot. And take the benefit of that and apply it to our whole organization. So now we're saying all the regions go for people groups, and they're using the much of the same methodology that was used by those who pioneered that.
Okay. Closing down here towards the end of the interview, can you just play the role of a prophet? What do you see Southern Baptist missions to look like in the year 2010?
Well, I think they'll look quite different than they do today. For one, I think there'll be a lot more personal involvement by more people, by a larger percentage of people. I think the idea of have gotten their hands wet and they've gotten involved with it has sort of changed the whole nature of the church, that we recognize that the church was not really just made for itself, it was made for mission.
Right.
And therefore the focus will be more on mission, so I would see a lot more missionaries, I would see a lot more volunteers, I would see a lot more giving. Those would be kind of traditional ways to look at it. I would see a lot more cooperation, because it's going to be, there's going to be a lot more initiative by local churches and by other groups. The International Mission Board is not a funnel for mission work, although it has been viewed that way in the past, but it's a facilitator, and we would like to be a facilitator for the whole world being reached, whatever it takes, whoever it takes.
Right.
So we'll see a lot of unilateral action as well as cooperative action. Hopefully we can continue to work in a cooperative way and cooperative strategies as we do that. In general, we do that today, even though there are many different groups that go overseas. I think there'll be a lot more work with other people than Baptists. There are today. It's beginning to be done that way. There certainly will be a large number of people from what we're now calling the third world who will be missionaries.
Right.
So we're going to be working right alongside of them as partners, as servants together. We will be outnumbered by them probably by 2010. So most of America has more missionaries than any other one country. That won't be true. The West will not be at the predominance by that time. Just because of the growth of the church in other places. Perhaps the center of missions will have moved to some other countries.
Some other geographical area or country.
As the main sending group.
Well, that's interesting. We'll just have to wait and see what God does. Just closing down the end of the interview, are there any closing comments that you would like to make before we end the interview?
Well, I say that we do all we can to listen to God and be sure we hear what he's saying and to watch and see what he's doing and join him. That is more important than all the strategies that we can think up, because he already has strategies. It's our job to discover those, and you do that by following and by following him very closely. And that is a spiritual process. It is it's an adventure of a life to say, I want to be where God's working right out there on the edge of lostness, or as one has said, right within the gates of hell and be rescuing people out of the abyss. So these are great days. I think these are the greatest days of missions in history. That more is happening right now than ever has, as far as I'm concerned. In a broad, worldwide effort to bring people to Christ. I think it's this is the great day to live.
Well, that's exciting. I appreciate you very much taking this time and being interviewed like this, and I can just say God bless you as you trust him and go on through.
Thank you. And I'll pray for you that in 2010,